Hello there. Today is Wednesday, April 26th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, lawmakers say the president's former security advisor may have broken the law.
And if you can connect the dots between Michael Flynn and Donald Trump, you may actually have a crime that was committed by the president-elect.
The battle continues in Washington to avoid a government shutdown before Friday. President Trump vows to confront anti-Semitism and hatred. Also ahead, a program that's helping children with autism cope with the stress of air travel. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the heads of the House Oversight Committee told reporters Tuesday that President Trump's former national security advisor appears to have violated federal law by not properly disclosing payments he received from foreign governments for public engagements. Now, this rare show of bipartisan consensus on Capitol Hill comes after the White House denied the committee's request for documents relating to retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn's contact with foreign nationals. Flynn was forced to leave the White House after lying to Vice President Mike Pence about his conversations with the Russian ambassador, to the U.S. during the period before Trump officially took office. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer downplayed claims that the White House is denying any request for documents, saying the committee had received everything it needed.
The only documents that were made available to them that they asked for were the ones that the Department of Defense had.
And after an hour-long classified briefing, Oversight Committee Chair Jason Chaffetz, a Utah Republican, said he'd seen no evidence that Flynn complied with the law. Representative Elijah Cummings of Maryland, the committee's ranking Democrat, said Flynn's contacts were a major problem. Joining me now for more perspective is prosecuting attorney and former CIA officer Jack Rice. Thank you for being with us. So what is your take on what has transpired?
When you see a bipartisan effort from the House Oversight Committee that says that Michael Flynn may have committed a crime, that's astounding. This is potentially the front end of the wedge for the likes of a Michael Flynn. He was the senior foreign policy advisor for Donald Trump. The idea that he may have committed a crime, the next obvious question is, what did he tell Donald Trump and when did he tell him? I realize it's trite, but it's a fundamental question, and the Bureau and Justice may have leverage over Michael Flynn now as a result.
When you say, what did he tell Donald Trump and when did he tell him, what do you mean? Because all we know is that he took money and didn't report it and wasn't supposed to take money as a former military officer.
We know that the Russians tried to manipulate U.S. elections. We know that the Russians gave Michael Flynn money. We know that Michael Flynn was supposed to tell the U.S. government that he received the money. We know that he did not tell them that he received the money. We also know that on December 30th, President Obama at the time imposed sanctions on the Russians. And what the Russians did was nothing. And that is shocking. The question is, what did Michael Flynn talk about with Ambassador Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, and what did he tell Donald Trump about that conversation? It's completely reasonable that Donald Trump's senior foreign policy advisor on the hottest issue going, the Russian issue, would have talked to Donald Trump about that issue. If that conversation was actually taking place, and this is the one that he denied was taking place to Mike Pence, there is a lot to talk about here. And this is the potential conspiracy.
And by conspiracy, can you just, for people that may not understand what you mean and how this ties into the presidency and the election?
This is a general criminal principle. And I say this as a former prosecutor and as a criminal defense attorney. If somebody commits a crime and another, even if they weren't involved in the crime originally, they help continue that crime. They perpetuate the crime itself. They themselves could be guilty of the crime in terms of helping the crime along. And the term is called conspiracy. So the potential is that whoever else was involved and knew about this could potentially be as guilty as the original perpetrator. That's what makes this really astounding. And now when you're starting to see Republicans, including the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, say Michael Flynn apparently committed a crime, we haven't seen that before. This is brand new.
How could all of this potentially be damaging to the President of the United States?
What's going to happen now is that the FBI may be running a current investigation. The potential for this is if you have a crime that has been committed by the senior foreign policy advisor to the president-elect, that is as close to the president-elect as we absolutely have at this point. And if you can connect the dots between Michael Flynn and Donald Trump, you may actually have a crime that was committed by the president-elect.
Do you expect that we will see an outside investigation into this whole Russia situation?
Believe it or not, what's really interesting here is the drips are coming from so many different directions right now. There would have been a point when I would have thought that partisanship may have tried to shut this investigation down. But the fear is that if partisanship actually tries to do that, it makes the Republicans look dirty. And the fear is that if this president really does get hit directly as a part of the investigation, the Republicans are going to have to try to manipulate this in such a way to make sure that they're saying this is about country over politics. Rarely does that happen in politics, but in this particular case, I think they're going to hold on to it. And I think what they're going to do is go at it aggressively if it appears this really is the case and there's no way for them to stop it. I think what we may be seeing here is a freight train. And as this freight train starts to gain speed, at some point, you may try to get in the way and stop it, but you're going to get run down by it. So you're better off getting out of the way, saying, yeah, that's what I wanted to see. Let's see that freight train. That's what we may get from the Republicans coming in the next 6 months to a year.
Well, the White House again has responded, saying it didn't know whether Flynn had broken the law in the course of making contact with and receiving payments from foreign governments. And as we said, Press Secretary Sean Spicer says the committee had received all the documents it needed from other agencies. That was former CIA officer Jack Rice. The U.S. Congress has just a few days to finish negotiations on a fiscal year 2017 budget. If lawmakers can't reach an agreement by midnight on April 28th, the government will shut down. The debate over legislative priorities comes as Donald Trump marks his 100th day in office. VOA's congressional reporter Catherine Gibson explains what this means for the Trump presidency.
The clock is ticking as Congress returns to Capitol Hill. Lawmakers have only 4 working days to sort out billions of dollars in funding. But President Trump is optimistic.
A good chance of getting it soon.
The last-minute uncertainty is nothing new. Congress couldn't reach an agreement in 2013, shutting down the government for 16 days. Even national parks were closed. But this time, the budget deadline hits just a day before another key date, President Trump's 100th day in office. The White House is touting the achievements candidate Trump laid out.
What follows is my 100-day action plan to make America great again.
As President Trump looks to the budget battle for a win on his biggest campaign promise, funding the 3,200-kilometer border wall with Mexico.
We're building the wall. In fact, it's going to start soon, way ahead of schedule.
But with a price tag in the billions, a border wall will be a tough sell for Republicans and a rallying point for opposition Democrats. And no one is sure if funding for the wall will be a deal-breaker for President Trump or just the first step towards a compromise in the form of more immigration funding. Headed in negotiations Monday, the White House was careful not to say.
But I'm not going to start to take things on and off the table with respect to what the president may or may not do.
Further consideration of H.R. 1628 is postponed.
But memories of the failed effort on health care are still fresh for Republicans, creating more pressure inside the party.
There's a lot about President Trump and his White House that's really uncertain, even for folks on Capitol Hill. President Trump is not a creature of Washington. He's not someone with a lot of legislative deal-making experience. And so we're sort of seeing this play out on this funding fight.
With tax reform and a return to the health care bill next up on Capitol Hill, it's a fight President Trump will need to win. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Canada increasingly is drawing Trump's ire. Ivanka Trump defends the president's stance toward women. A judge blocks an order withholding funding from sanctuary jurisdictions. And President Trump is set to call for big U.S. corporate tax cut. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Donald Trump vowing on Tuesday to confront anti-Semitism and hatred as he commemorated National Holocaust Remembrance Day in a ceremony at the U.S. Capitol. Trump addressed a crowd of Holocaust survivors, their families, and Jewish dignitaries at the Capitol ceremony.
You tell of these living nightmares because despite your great pain, you believe in Ellie's famous plea that for the dead and the living, we must bear witness. That is why we are here today, to remember and to bear witness, to make sure that humanity never, ever forgets.
He called Adolf Hitler's annihilation of 6 million Jews in World War II history's darkest hour and condemned those who deny the Holocaust. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
VOA's International Edition continues now. We've been hearing a lot lately about airline passengers having traumatic experiences. Traveling can be stressful for anyone, but it's especially challenging for children with mental health issues. But my next guest talks about what her organization is doing to address just this. Joining me now is Sarah Ball, Director of Public Relations for The Arc, the nation's oldest and largest nonprofit serving people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us. So your Wings for Autism program sounds like it's doing some great stuff. I imagine the children with some of these challenges would really have a tough time with all that goes into air travel.
Travel is stressful for everyone, and, you know, you do see the news, as do all the families across the country right now. And, you know, for parents of children with autism spectrum disorders and other intellectual and developmental disabilities, there's a lot of questions to take into consideration. You know, how is your child going to respond to the lights at the airport? Are they going to be comfortable with airport security and TSA touching them or asking them questions? All the noises, the different people, you know, having to give up your belongings to clear security, it's a sensory overload, but then also just some other issues that arise. You've been to an airport, I've been to an airport, it can be a lot.
I mean, yeah, it really can. I understand you guys are looking to address these problems and have some programs that are helping people have a better experience or less traumatic experience when they do need to take their kids traveling.
So we have the Wings for Autism, also known as Wings for All program. And what it is, it's an airport rehearsal specially designed for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. Obviously, intellectual and developmental disabilities includes children with autism spectrum disorders. And the training is actually not just for families and individuals with disabilities. It's for aviation professionals. And we have been doing it at airports across the country. We've had over 70 events at 35 different airports nationwide, and more than 2,000 families have benefited from Wings for Autism across the country.
Can you describe a little bit about what the program actually does? You say it's a dress rehearsal. Tell us a little bit about it.
It's pretty much the entire airport experience. You know, for free, families are able to go to the airport, get a boarding pass. Sometimes they're even able to take a suitcase and book it. They clear security. They get to board a plane. In Alaska, we've even had the plane taxi, and so they get the full experience. But what's great about it is they don't have to worry about buying a ticket and their child not making it onto the plane and losing that money. And they're able to address the issues and try things out, walk around the plane, see, does my son or daughter do better with a window seat or an aisle seat? Is, you know, it too stressful for them to go through security without their headset on? Things like that. So it's just a full trial run. And, you know, sometimes the families make it all the way through, and sometimes they make it security and have to turn around and go back, but the pressure is taken off because they're not rushing to catch a flight. And it's also kind of a judgment-free zone because they're there with professionals. The TSA, airline, and airport staff receive training from the ARC, local chapter that's sponsoring, and other partners beforehand, so they know how to better support these families and individuals. And so it's, and sometimes families go back more than once to perfect it. And we've had a lot of great success stories with families saying that Wings for Autism or Wings for All have enabled our family to travel because they got to take that test run and see that it's possible. You know, we've heard families driving close to 1,000 miles because they've been too fearful of flying and the impact on their child with a disability.
So what kind of issues come up for these families with children with either disabilities, emotional issues, or autism? What would be their experience, say, without something like this? What kind of problems would they run into?
You know, so let's say a family bought 4 tickets to fly to Orlando, and they get to the airport, and they don't realize that, you know, waiting in line with all the lights and noise is going to stress out their child, and, you know, they lose their place in line, they could be delayed, and then going through the entire TSA, maybe they don't realize that their child has to take off, well, the children don't have to take off their shoes, but that, you know, they have to give up their bag or give up their bear or blanket, something that's a safety to them. And if that caused a stressful situation, the child could refuse to go through. The parent, you know, might in turn get stressed. It might delay them or cause them to miss a flight. And through this program, they're able to talk to TSA, talk to airport staff. They can learn about the TSA Cares program, where TSA can help them move through security faster if they have an individual with intellectual or developmental disability or a physical disability, any special needs that need addressed. You know, TSA can help accommodate, and it's not a thing a lot of people know, but through this program, they get to learn a little bit more and find out what the triggers are for their child, too. That's what we hear a lot, that they don't know going in what is going to be difficult for their child, but they get to find out through this program, because for some people, it's actually going into the enclosed space of the runway, getting onto the plane that's difficult,
right,
or, you know, the sounds.
And I understand airports are now also creating what are called quiet rooms for children on the autism spectrum. More and more of those are starting to pop up.
Yes, absolutely. You know, last year in Hartsfield Airport in Atlanta, they were actually launching a sensory room in the international terminal, and it was actually launched during our inaugural Wings for Autism event in Atlanta. It's just a resource for families and airports that have them. I think it's being nice for families to know if their child or loved one with a disability is struggling, hey, there's this safe space we can go, chill out, get away from the noises and the lights and everything, and regroup. So it's just another great resource, and it's a way for airports to better support these individuals and their families.
All right. Sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. That's Sarah Ball, Director of Public Relations for the ARC, the nation's oldest and largest nonprofit serving people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Turning now to social media and what's been trending, we're joined by Andrew Palchewski. Hey, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, there are two big new efforts to combat one of our favorite topics, fake news. The first is from a man named Jimmy Wales. Now, you may not have heard of Jimmy Wales, but you've certainly heard of the website that he founded, Wikipedia. Of course, everybody knows Wikipedia. Well, Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia, is launching WikiTribune. It's a new crowdsourced news site. It's going to employ journalists that cover the news, with their coverage fact-checked and monitored by a community of vetted contributors, similar to how Wikipedia works. You put an article up on Wikipedia, you put up information, it gets checked by editors, it gets altered if it's not true, it has to be cited. But there's a lot of questions about, can this actually work? Policing this, there are questions about that, how people can keep it factual. A lot of people are noting that articles on Wikipedia oftentimes have fake nuggets slipped into them and they're not discovered for weeks or months or even ever. There are still articles I come across and I find things where I say, that's not true, but it still gets through. They're also asking, as part of this new website, for people to pay £10, British pounds, or $15 per month to sustain this site. Now, people are wondering, is that something that can actually work, where you can get news from anywhere these days? Do people actually want to pay to get their news if, with the supposed assumption that it's going to be factual? If they can get other news that's free that's factual, then why would they do this? So, an interesting effort. We're going to see if it takes off, but right now, Wiki Tribune is the plan for Jimmy Wales. The other big fake news combatant is Google's Project Owl.
Wow. So really, people are taking this stuff seriously now.
Yeah. Facebook and Twitter have talked about combating fake news. Facebook in particular. Facebook had a lot of fake news during the election.
Yeah.
So they talked about how they were going to combat that.
Yeah, it was a big concern for them.
And now Google as well. So this Project Owl from Google is going to address some problematic searches that come up on Google. So searches that result in fake news stories or blatant falsehoods. For instance, if you search for a political figure's name and a bunch of conspiracy theory articles come up, that's not a good thing in Google's eyes. So they're going to limit those fake news conspiracy theory results from coming up. They're also going to change some of their rankings to limit articles that are suggested in Google News to keep them more factual, and changing some of the autocomplete search terms to remove offensive phrases. So you see this from time to time go viral on social media. You put in a phrase and the first five results that it suggests are all offensive. Well, they're going to try to limit some of that so that you don't get those offensive search results. They're starting to roll this out today. It's going to be rolled out over time, these different elements that they're doing, but the hope is that it'll cut down on misinformation when you search on Google.
All right. Thanks so much, as always, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. So how do you know the person you are about to marry is the right one for you? Or what if you've never dated anyone but them? What happens when an innocent question turns into a premarital crisis? Those are some of the questions director Brian Crano asks in his new movie, Permission. VOA's David Byrd tells us about the film, which stars Dan Stevens and Rebecca Hall.
Anna, played by Rebecca Hall, and her fiancé Will, played by Dan Stevens, have been sweethearts since high school. Now it's Rebecca's 30th birthday, and she and Will are about to get married. While out to dinner to celebrate, Anna's brother Hale and his partner Reese point out that Anna has never been with anyone but Will. The couple's future is put in doubt by that one observation. Rebecca Hall says that her character doesn't really know what monogamy is because she's never experienced anything else.
And on her 30th birthday, their best friend pokes fun at them and teases them by saying that they haven't been adventurous enough in their romantic life, and suggests that they open their relationship before they settle down for married monogamy, and that they don't understand what monogamy really is because they haven't ever experienced anything else. And it's sort of a joke, but it sort of isn't, but then the film proceeds from that statement.
Dan Stevens, known for his recent role of the Beast in Disney's live-action version of Beauty and the Beast, and as the ill-fated Matthew Crawley on TV's Downton Abbey, says the story reflects what a lot of people experience.
Yes, kind of, yes. Yeah, there's some exploration that happens. I think a lot of the characters are at a stage in their life where they're exploring some of the bigger relationship questions that you know, a lot of people find themselves facing in their sort of early 30s, you know.
Anna and Will aren't the only ones facing tough life choices. Hale, played by David Joseph Craig, and Reese, played by Rebecca Hall's real-life husband, Morgan Spector, are struggling to take the next step in their relationship as well, starting a family. Writer-director Brian Crano says the film was like a group of best friends who just made a movie together.
First of all, Rebecca, who is Rebecca Hall, has been a friend of mine for a long time. Dan Stevens has been a friend of mine for a long time. So, as well as both Rebecca's husband and my husband are in the film as well. So it was like a real family affair and a lot of fun. Really, a lot of fun to make this movie. You know, we tried to do it all walking distance from our house, show a real side of Brooklyn, and make a movie that. Hopefully we'll, make a lot of people a little nuts, a little anxious.
Permission also stars François Arnault, Jason Sudeikis, and Gina Gershon. It's playing at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Daryl Smith. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late April last year, the government of Saudi Arabia, contending with low oil prices and diversifying energy production beyond traditional fossil fuel sources, formed a plan called Vision 2030 to reduce the country's dependence on oil and to invest in and diversify its economy. We support Saudi Arabia's 2030 plan that seeks to transform their economy and society, said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson at a U.S.-Saudi Arabia CEO summit held recently in Washington, D.C.
In particular, specific commitments to increase foreign ownership on listed companies, to boost the women's workforce participation rate from 22% to 30%, to augment the private sector's contribution to GDP from 40% to 65%, to move to free market pricing in place of subsidies in energy, to raise the share of non-oil exports from 16% to 50% of non-oil GDP, and to increase dramatically the capacity and quality of the health and education sectors through substantial capital investment.
The United States could be of great help to Saudi Arabia in this endeavor, said Secretary of State Tillerson. For Saudi Arabia's transformation to succeed, the private sector requires support from us in the public sector. This means engaging the Saudi government to ensure rule of law in commercial transactions, transparency in procurement, adherence to international science-based standards developed in consultation with industry experts, the protection of intellectual property rights, and a simpler, streamlined process to register and establish businesses in the kingdom. The U.S. government is standing by to assist Saudi Arabia in this endeavor, including by facilitating partnerships between American businesses and Saudi Arabia. The United States private sector is known for its development and use of superior technology, high-quality products, creativity, professionalism, and reliable service. What's more, U.S. companies can be relied upon to deliver on their commitments. Economic cooperation between the United States and Saudi Arabia is a win-win for both countries. When U.S. companies invest in the Saudi economy, everyone wins, said Secretary of State Tillerson. The U.S. creates jobs at home, and businesses in the Gulf region get the best business partners that the global marketplace has to offer.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.